organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
I'm taking you home on the drive home at 5. This song was resonating in my head last night as I walked down from the 17th floor here at Madison Square Garden into the street below 7th Avenue and then into the subway system that gobbled me up. And when I looked up high in the sky, I saw the Empire State Building bathed in the colors. Let me bite my tongue. Of the cheaters, the New England Patriots, led by Tom Brady and the Brady Bunch and their coach Belichick. They have cheated consistently. Bathed on one side of the top of the Empire State Building in blue and white, and then on the other side in Philadelphia Eagle green, they are the thugs. So it's going to be the cheaters versus the thugs. And not only are the Philadelphia Eagles thuggish on the gridiron, but their fans are absolutely off the hook. Remember, these were the same fans that threw snowballs at Santa Claus when they played at the old Franklin Field many, many years ago. Threw snowballs at Santa Claus, knocked them out. These fans were so out of control that when the cops on their horses tried to rein them in, outside of the stadium in Philadelphia where they were able to trounce the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, really trounce the Minnesota Vikings so that all of these Norwegians headed back to Norway. So now Trump has no Norwegians here. The last of the Vikings. And they started knocking out horses, police horses. The city officials, through the Department of Transportation, started to grease up the telephone poles with butter and Crisco because they knew these Gavone fans would be trying to shimmy up the poles and then start a riot, whether they lost to the Vikings or they won. They did this preemptively. And then did you see that idiot on the SEPTA system platform, you know, their subway system, as the Eagle fans naturally were knocking back cheap beer on the train. This is after they won. This Philadelphia Eagle fan starts running after the train like he's going to start surfing, you know, on the top of this SEPTA subway train. And he crashes right into one of the stanchions, knocking himself out. Tell me this is not a total Gavone, a knuckle dragger. But imagine to bathe the Empire State Building in the lights of the cheaters, the New England Patriots, and next to it, the thugs, the criminals, the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, why is this so important? I'll tell you why, because it's personal to me. I take you back to June 9th of 2010. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was the celebration of what would have been, I believe at that time, the 100th birthday for Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa, right? Could you be any more of an iconic spiritual figure than Mother Teresa, right? Honored throughout the world. More so than the Dalai Lama with Richard Gere and the gerbil following him as he pays tribute to the Dalai Lama. Far more respected than the Dalai Lama. Mother Teresa from Albania, poor and impoverished country, gave selfless service, had her nuns settle up in the South Bronx where they lived a pious life, unlike so many of the fake, phony, fraudulent, fugazi, pedophile priests of the Roman Catholic Church. These were pious women, many of them coming from India herself, the country, and other parts to do selfless service here and in other parts of the world. So the idea came to Bill Donahue, the head of the Catholic League, to honor Mother Teresa. And the idea was that the Empire State Building, on that occasion of her 100th birthday, would bathe the top of the steeple, I'll call it, for all intents and purposes, at the very top, the 110th floor, the observation deck, and northward of that, in blue and white, the colors of Mother Teresa. And do you know that the owner at that time, Anthony Malkin, and I don't think this would have occurred when Donald Trump shared ownership with the Helmsley family, although it got very bitter between Leona. You know, only little people pay taxes. Her husband at that time, who was Meshuggah, you know, he was like Alzheimer's dementia combined, and Donald Trump. They ended up splitting their ways. Interesting sidebar story, I got to tell you this, is that Al Slim Shady Sharpton, before the attack of 9/11, had offices for his National Action Hate Network, was a deadbeat, slacker, didn't pay any rent for like 2 years. So now all of a sudden he's got to go to housing court. And he said, oh, but I can't get any of my employees to come to the Empire State Building after the attack of 9/11 at the World Trade Center site because they're afraid that this may be the target. And he beat the rep. But anyway, this Anthony Malkin, owner of the Empire State Building, would not honor Mother Teresa. Why? Because she is pro-life. But he'll honor the criminals, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the cheaters, the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick of the New England Patriots in what has to be the most vile Super Bowl yet. Meantime, a little Godfather here because I need a mood elevation. I feel soiled at having to look up at the Empire State Building and see it bathed in the green of the Eagles and the blue and the white of the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick. But oh, today, down in federal court, U.S. Southern District, on trial, Joe Piccolo. And you know, I want a high five. I don't know who the federal prosecutor Robert Led Boone is. I think he's African American. He had a 32-minute opening statement against Joe Piccolo. And really, it was against his very dear Kumbaricich, his Campo di Tutti, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I. At a certain portion of his opening statement against Piccolo, he walks directly over to Joe Piccolo. He is nose to nose, mano a mano. And pointing to Piccolo's face, he tells jurors he was Cuomo's right-hand man. And remember what Cuomo said as he gave the eulogy for the passing of his father, Mario.
And my father's third son, who sometimes I think he loved the most, Joe Piccolo, really did an extraordinary job, and they did an extraordinary job with his funeral, and we want to thank them.
He did. Because if you notice, Andrew refers to his father often, not as daddy, not as pops, not as my father, as Mario. If I would have called my father, hey, Chester, come here, he'd have hit me so hard my mother would have felt the vibrations. And, you know, pretty boy Chris Cuomo, right of CNN, you know, the guy with the muscle between both ears. He also would refer to his dad as Mario. Is that not the ultimate in disrespect? But let's continue. The prosecutor repeatedly emphasized that Piccolo's closeness to Cuomo, calling Piccolo a powerful man whose phone calls to state employees spurred immediate action. He then said Piccolo was in need of scatter all money after purchasing a costly home in South Salem, which I think is up in Westchester County. Could you check that? Make yourself worthwhile here. Would you please, Justin B. Love, hipster invader from Alabama? And it stretched his finances as a public official. And actually, his wife wanted this house. It was a dream house. So she natted him, right? And he had to make more money. So he used his job, his power, and his influence as Andrew Evil Eye Cuomo's hitman, his leg breaker, his wartime consigliere, to shake down energy companies upstate outside of Syracuse as part of the Buffalo Billions project and was rolling in dough. $300,000 he shook him down for. And he got a no-show job for his wife, who did 20 hours a week and, get this, made $90,000. This is net after gross. I don't know of anybody who is that important, who knows nothing about energy, who suddenly gets a job at this company 20 hours a week. It's like a web worker. You know, when you used to get welfare in New York under Giuliani, you had to do 20 hours a week, you know, mopping the subway cars at the end of the stop. I don't know of anybody who's that important to any business that she should have been netting $90,000 a year while doing 20 hours a week. You know that was a kickback. You know that was part of the shakedown. And boy, it was magnificent. It was 30 minutes of giving Pococo hell before that jury of 12. I think 5 African Americans, 7 whites, mostly male, some female. And, you know, the Southern District, it consists of Westchester County, Manhattan, and Staten Island. No, not Staten Island. Am I right? I need to check that. I think Staten Island is the Eastern District. Make yourself useful again, Justin B. Love. But I'm telling you, I'm so fatuts. I am has such knockus, such joy, knowing that they're crucifying Pococo, which really is the tag on to Andrew Evilize Cuomo and what will be his failed presidential ambitions. Because Pococo is one of nine Cuomo cronies who were part of the shakedown extortion in varying degrees of the Buffalo Billions, which was a shakedown of us, the taxpayers. And now that my mood has been elevated, should I forget that the Empire State Building committed the worst of disgracias, the worst of shandas, by bathing its tower in the colors of the Philadelphia Eagles, the criminals, and the cheaters, the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick of the New England Patriots? When they dissed and dismissed Mother Teresa back in 2010, they wouldn't honor her because she was pro-life. What a double disgrazia. What a shanda.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Here he comes. 26 as we continue here on the Drive Home at 5. You remember when we had NYCHA resident Camelia Price on, who had just run against the sitting borough president, Ruben Diaz Jr., as a Reform Party candidate, but lost, but clearly is an expert on NYCHA problems. She had told us that at the Patterson houses, right off of 146 and 3rd Avenue in the heart of the South Bronx, they were without heat and hot water, and the city had moved in a school bus. They called it a warming bus, a yellow school bus. And they said, hey, tough noogies, you're not getting any heat and hot water for a while. The boilers are kaput. And so go sit in the warming bus. No toilet, no amenities, no nothing. Well, it turns out that many days afterwards, I was watching Fox 5 locally, Channel 5 News. Hey, guess who I saw doing a report? My former wife, Lisa Evers, a.k.a. Lisa Sliwa. Excellent report about how the Patterson residents still didn't have heat and hot water. And they were raising the roof. And nobody at NYCHA would do absolutely jackdiddly squat anything. And this comes on the heels of the mayor yesterday sacking the number two guy in charge of NYCHA because of the problems involving lead paint testing and just all kinds of problems in NYCHA. But not the chairwoman. No, not the chairwoman. In fact, even though NYCHA has failed at so many levels, the chairwoman, Shola Olatier, I think I got that right, is like an untouchable. Listen to the mayor again today.
Shola took office. The Housing Authority was literally teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. She righted the ship. I want to give her a lot of credit and look, I think it would have been a different situation if what was being done in the previous administration had complied with the law. That's where the problem started, as you know. I wish we had caught it a lot sooner. I'm very clear about that. I think we have our share of missteps. But when you put that mistake, which predates us, up against the totality of what she's achieved, I continue to have great faith in her.
Bull feathers. Meantime, Greg B. Smith, to his credit, in the New York Daily News, has been relentless as a gumshoe reporter on the NYCHA issues. He should get a Pulitzer Prize. He really should. Because he has disproved all the lies coming from the mayor's office about the inefficiency, ineffectiveness, and malfeasance of the NYCHA leadership. On the line, though, to discuss that is Camilla Price, who lives in NYCHA housing. Thanks for joining us again, Camilla.
Thank you for having me again, Curtis. I just want to make one correction. I do not live in NYCHA. I was born in NYCHA Projects, Sonia Sotomayor.
My mistake, malfeasance on my part. Thank you. But tell us, as the mayor continues to defend the chiefess of NYCHA and points fingers at everyone else, why do you think he is so protective of her?
I'm starting to ask that question myself because he's trying to blame the lead-based paint issue on the prior administration when Rhea was there. But my question is, okay, fine, and you know there was a problem, but you continue addressing the problem with the same lies. This woman actually, the chairwoman, actually sat in front of the city council and told a blanket lie that she had HUD inspectors inspecting the lead. That's not true. That wasn't from the previous administration. That's from the current administration. So the question is, what does he owe this woman? What was her part in his campaign that he is protecting her to this level of what's going on with the NYCHA folks? But they still freezing, no heat, no hot water, and she's still the chair. They're replacing people underneath her, yes. But they can't. The people underneath her can't make the decisions. She's the decision maker. Why is her resignation not called for at this moment by everyone? They should be outraged that this woman sat at a hearing and told that lie that she did. If me and you go somewhere and lie, Curtis, and they catch us in a lie, they'd be ready to put us in jail, contempt of court, all kinds of things.
Sure.
Nothing happened.
For perjury rap, in fact, if she had sworn in, but naturally, they gave her the courtesy. She wasn't sworn in, so she can continue to lie. Camilla, based on all the constituents that you represent up in the Bronx, how bad are conditions in NYCHA? Explain it to our audience, because, you know, our audience thinks everyone in NYCHA in a public housing project, they don't pay rent. They pay $1 billion in rent, and many, many of them are working normal 9-to-5 jobs.
Oh, yes, you have people that they're paying, $1,800 a month, because now NYCHA has this rule, you have to pay 30% of your salary. They don't care how much you make. Everybody in NYCHA is not on public assistance or minimum wage jobs. You have a lot of people that work for MTA. I know a couple people that work for Bridge and Tunnel, correction officers, and they're paying a good penny. But you know how bad the conditions are in NYCHA? When there's an article, and I don't know if you saw this, Curtis, it was an article about a 73-year-old woman in the Soundview section of Bronx, 93-year-old woman in the Sound that had no heat or hot water, and she was frozen in her bed. That is uncalled for. She could not get out of bed because it was too cold in her apartment.
Well, Camilla,
how bad.
Camilla Price, I want you to continue to basically be our eyes and ears amongst the NYCHA residents that you work with on a regular basis so we can continue to hammer this mayor who's been in denial. Remember, he did this with the head of child welfare when kids were being killed all over the city. He wouldn't sack her. Then remember the moose caller from Maine who was going back and forth, who was head of the corrections department. Remember how he got away with everything? And again, this mayor would not sack him. And now we have his chiefess, the head of NYCHA. He won't sack her. What do these people have on the mayor? Do you think they have pictures of him with donkeys south of the border in Ensenada?
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
As we continue here on the drive home at 5. And is it fear, fright, hysteria, and hype? this warning that consistently comes at us a mile a minute about the flu pandemic that seems to be sweeping the nation? Or is it an overreaction? On the line right now is Michael Fumento. He's an author, analyst, attorney, journalist, and popular speaker. But he's currently living south of the border. Am I correct, Mike?
Yeah, south of the wall.
Or I'm south? Right, south of the wall. Okay, in Mexico. But you wrote an op-ed piece that I read diligently in the New York Post on the same day I had to do visitation to my two youngest sons in Forest Hills, Carter and Hunter, who had just come from a two-hour visit to the pediatrician's office where it was packed with parents and kids who were either sniffling, coughing, sneezing, and fearing that they had suddenly come down with the flu. But you are saying basically there's a lot of hype here, correct?
That's exactly why the emergency rooms across the nation are, in fact, filled with patients. It's not that they have the flu, it's that because of everything they've read, they think they have the flu. Completely different concepts, don't you think?
Yeah, but you see the CDC, we always look to the CDC down in Atlanta. We consider them the experts. They keep warning us, oh boy, this isn't like the Spanish flu, the influenza. They wiped out millions in 1918 after World War One, but it's a pretty bad version of the flu, and we don't really have the proper vaccine. Wouldn't that at least suggest that we be cautionary?
Well, here's what the CDC actually says, and you can go to their website, of course. They say that measured flu infections in the United States are about the same as last year and the year before and lower than 3 years ago. That flu deaths are about the same, probably a little lower than last year and the year before and much lower than 3 years ago. But they do say that flu hospitalizations are much higher than they have been. And I've just explained why. It's the media spreading panic that's bringing people to the hospital. But in terms of deaths, illnesses among children, any way you want to cut it, this flu is basically normal, maybe a little bit milder. Now, you did mention something that indicates why the panic started. There were actually two reasons. One is the flu season started a little earlier this year. But that means it will probably end earlier this year. In fact, the CDC is now on record as saying the flu has peaked in the United States. It gets better from here on. The other thing, which you explicitly stated, was about the vaccine. It is true that this year's vaccine is providing less protection than normal. Normally, about 50 to 60% of people vaccinated don't get flu. This year, it's only 30%. So a few months ago, you would have been correct to be concerned that this would be an especially bad season. It just hasn't turned out that way. The flu vaccine is less effective, but we're not getting more cases. We're not getting more deaths. We're not getting anything more except panic.
Now, didn't this start, Michael Fumento, in the land down under, Australia, in the land of the kangaroos, the wombats, and the koala bears, when they started pumping out SOSs to the rest of the world, like, oh, my God, we have no control of this pandemic sweeping from Perth to Melbourne and Sydney?
Yes, actually, in my original article, I had to cut it. I quoted a couple of medical doctors in Australia saying this could be the worst flu ever. The worst flu ever, as you noted, was the Spanish flu, 1918-1919. If we had a Spanish flu with today's population, 2 million Americans would die. Instead, it's looking more like about 12,000 Americans will die. That's a little less than 2 million. So, yeah, in a sense, Australia, you could blame Australians for starting this panic. Don't get me wrong. I love Australia. I'd love to live there. But they blew this.
Now, I seem to remember a few years ago when we were in the midst of a pandemic here, not a serious one, but there was obviously a lot of cases of swine flu, that there were reports from where you're broadcasting to us from in Mexico City that they were stacking up bodies, you know, that the morgues were overflowing with victims of swine flu. In fact, the leader of the World Health Organization, WHO, was claiming, oh, my God, this is the worst flu ever. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I not only remember it, but from the very beginning, I was writing about swine flu and about the swine flu hysteria. It actually turns out that there were two distinct factors about swine flu. One is it was much milder than the normal seasonal flu. It killed far fewer people, made far fewer people sick. A lot of people with swine flu didn't even know they have the flu. The other thing, though, is that swine flu is more contagious than the normal seasonal flu. It was, in a sense, acting like a vaccination. If you were lucky enough to get the swine flu strain, you were getting protected against worse strains. And for that reason, that year, the first year of swine flu, had a very, very low fatality rate throughout the whole world. Mexico, United States, wherever you went, it was a very mild flu season, all thanks to swine flu.
Well, do appreciate that, Michael Fomento, who's actually talking to us from Mexico City. But I remember that. The Hazarites, the pigs, right? They said the swine flu. And I had contacted our Guardian Angel chapter leader in Mexico City. His name is Vampiro. He's a world-renowned wrestler from there, sort of the Hulk Hogan of Mexico, although he's originally from Canada, Thunder Bay. And I asked him to go through the streets because they said they were stacking bodies and the morgues were overflowing. And we did some broadcasts at the time with Vampiro. He said, there are no bodies in the morgues. There are no bodies on the sidewalks. It was overhyped. Fear, fright, hysteria, and hype. Now, it's not to suggest we're not going to get hit with a little flu here. I've taken some precautions because we got some real Hazarites here amongst our broadcasters. Specifically, Bernard McGurk and Sid Rosenberg, who never wash their hands. You know, they go into the men's room here and forget about it. It's like a third world bathroom, you know, a latrine that hasn't been cleaned in a month of Sundays. So I got the Lysol out. I got the rubbing alcohol. Hopefully neither of them will be drinking the rubbing alcohol because you know how they like to knock back a few. And do you think these guys will wash their hands after they use the facilities, the urinal and the toilet, after they sit on the porcelain palace? No. No. Now watch. They'll get the flu, the grip in their throat. And it'll start working its way through those who broadcast here, John Batchelor from 9 to 1 in the morning, all of our local hosts. But it ain't going to hit me because I know how to deal with the pandemic, even though there's fear, fright, hysteria, and mass hype. All you got to do is wash your hands, right, and sing happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me, happy birthday, dear Curtis, happy birthday to me.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Tom Petty, loved his music, but boy, he fell this past weekend because he OD'd on fentanyl patches. Now, it wasn't Big Pharma who caused him to die. He OD'd by using too many fentanyl patches. I've used fentanyl patches in recovery after the 8 hours of surgery that I had at Columbia Presbyterian to remove my chronic Crohn's disease. Prince died from overdosing on fentanyl. He wasn't taking it based on what the prescription said. And both these guys, let's face it, they were still entertaining with tremendous pains in their knees, their ankles, and their hips. But today, the part-time mayor, the dope from Park Slope, decided he's going to sue Big Pharma for $500 million for their role in the opioid epidemic. Now, as you know, for 2 years, I was on OxyContin, which is oxycodone hydrochloride. It's hillbilly heroin. without which I could not have been broadcasting here. I would have been bedridden. I would have been in a fetal position. How many of your city hospitals write and prescribe these drugs that prevent pain? How often is it people who misuse them who end up either in a morgue or have to recover from almost OD? So, de Blasio, stop suing people and do your freaking job.